you will, I'll get this thing on here, turn your Bibles this afternoon, Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter number 11, and we're going to look beginning in verse number 10 tonight, or this afternoon, as we go down through these last 22, 23 verses of Genesis chapter 11, and we will see here these generations of Shem. And as I said, there's some overlaps that I want us to see here in this that stand out, that are remarkable, really, when you consider what kind of impact those things, those overlaps may have had, that we don't really know about. We don't really know fully. We know that they exist, but as to what influence those had on these individuals, we don't really know. Those are just, I guess, questions that come into our mind as we consider this time period. This is the narrative, the historical narrative that God has given us in His Word. These things that are early history in the beginning and shortly thereafter. We take up here in chapter 11, which this, as Scofield sets it, at 2247 B.C., and depending on who you read, Usher will have a different time frame as well, but all of them around 2200, 2500 B.C. when this event is taking place here in regards to Abram. The flood itself took place 1,656 years after creation. 1,656 years. Given the genealogies of Seth, we can find that time frame. So 1,656 years after creation, you have this flood that takes place. To get on to Abraham is another 290 years. So from the flood to Abraham is another 290 years. And so this is how far Abraham is removed from the flood. And I will get into these overlaps in this genealogy as we go through this evening, but I want you to see how closely related this is to Abram and what he would have known or made, what he would be privy to in regards to the events of the recent past in these generations. But we begin in verse 10, and it tells us here this genealogies of Shem, or the generations of Shem. These are the generations of Shem. Shem was 100 years old and begat Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. So when the flood came, we find Shem was 98 years old. That means Noah was already building on the ark 22 years before Shem was even born, you see. And so and what's interesting is when you get to the end of chapter 5 there, and it's giving you the genealogies of Seth, and it gets down to Noah, it simply stops there as in kind of a weird fashion, because in all the rest of them, it's giving you a specific date of the one that's being traced in the genealogy. It says so-and-so lived 75 years and he begat, and the next one he begat, he lived 60 years and he begat, and he lived so-and-so years and he begat. When it gets to Noah, it's different. It ends at Noah, and with Noah it says, and Noah was 500 years old and begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. So we know, unless they're triplets, likely they're born at different places. It's just telling us at 500 years, Noah has these three sons. And actually, Shem would not yet be born until Noah was 502, you see. And so that's the reason it's kind of It's kind of strange in how it ends that genealogy. What you find, it ends the same way when you get to Abram. It tells about his father, Terah, and he was, of course, we'll get down there in just a minute, and he was, had three, his three sons, you know. It just ends at that. And it doesn't give us the breakdown of those individuals. And we find out later, in fact, with Shem here, that Shem's exact age in regards to the flood. So Shem was 98 years old when the flood happened. 2 years after the flood, he was 100 years old, and he begat his son Arphaxad. It says Shem lived after he begat Arphaxad 500 years and begat sons and daughters. And I want you to see that. Begat, lived 500 years after he begat Arphaxad. So Shem lived a total of 600 years. Noah lived 950. So after the flood, you see an immediate drop in the length of days that men live. There's the change that took place in the environment itself and what was, how it was protected antediluvial before the flood, how the earth was protected in the way that God had created then, as opposed to what changed after the flood. You see a dramatic drop in the lifespan of man following the flood. And so these changes take place very quickly. In fact, if we'll pay attention as we go down through this genealogy, you see them dropping 200 years just about each time. I mean, in two sections. 200, it goes down from 600 to 400, from 400 to 200, from 200 to 150, basically. I mean, it just drops like that in just a few, in these 290 years. So you see this lifespan going from 900 plus immediately down to 600 and then dropping rapidly after that. So Shem, even though he was one from the antediluvial stage, when he comes into the realm of the after flood, his lifespan also quickly drops to 600 years. Shem lived after he begat Arphaxad 500 years and begat sons and daughters. And so Shem had many others besides Arphaxad. Arphaxad, verse 12, lived 530 years and begat Selah. And it says, and Arphaxad lived, verse 13, after he begat Selah, 403 years and begat sons and daughters. So Arphaxad lives a total of 438 years. So it drops instantly, 600 years to 438 years with the timeline of Arphaxad. And he lived 35 years and begat Selah there. And then verse 14, Selah lived 30 years and begat Eberu. And Eberu lived, or I'm sorry, Selah lived, verse 15, after he begat Eberu, 403 years, and, begat sons and daughters. So he lived a total of 433 years. Of course, he begat Eberu. Eberu is the one that the children of Israel received their name from. The Hebrews, that comes from this man, Eberu, that's who they are named after. Now, the scripture tells us that that's who they received their name from, but we don't have anything else about him other than the fact that he's in this genealogy. And so it would be interesting for me, anyway, to know what's the significance of Eberu, that he would be the one that the children of Israel are named after, that they would receive that name from. Was he the one that kind of maybe put the language to writing or something, you know, that they would call it the Hebrew language? I don't know. But his name is the one that they are named for, and yet all we have recorded for us in the scripture is that he's in the line and the genealogy. And so that's unique in this genealogy, that he would be the one they're named after, but we don't have anything else concerning him in the scriptures. Eberew lived 430 years, and he begat Peleg. And Eberew lived after he begat Peleg 430 years and begat sons and daughters. And, of course, he died. And so Eberew lived a total of 464 years. So he actually increases a little bit over Arphaxad and Selah. But then the timeline very quickly drops again in the days of Peleg. Now, we've already been told that during the days of Peleg, the earth was divided. And so I believe that's what is in reference to what we just studied about here in the first part of chapter 11 with the division of the nations here when God removes them from the plain of Shinar, sends the confusion upon the languages of those tribes, and those folks separate there from the plain of Shinar and go into all the parts of the world. I believe that's what's being told us here in regards to Peleg. So it happened during his life. And Peleg lived between 1,757 years after the flood up to 1,996 years after the flood. After creation. So 1,757 years to 1,996 years after creation. This is the time that Peleg lived. Just a little over 100, 101 years after the flood. So he is in that time frame, and we are told that that is when this event in chapter 11 takes place, when God divides the nations here and sends them out. So literally within at least 100 years up to 300 years from the flood, we have this event of what took place here at Babel and the building of the tower and the people being scattered there. It happened in that 200-year frame in regards to the days of Peleg. That's very interesting when we begin to look at these overlaps, because what we find is Abraham was alive during this time, at least part of it. And so if Abraham was alive during this time, was the reason Abraham's family, we know that they are in the Ur of the Chaldees, that's where Haran was born. The Bible tells us that here in this text. So were they there in the Ur of the Chaldees because of this? Because of the scattering? Was that where they first went to as they were traveling out from this? Was Abram already born at the time of the scattering? And they were already, and maybe they were already obedient and had gone out and got away from this, because primarily what we see is, even though it says the whole earth was gathered there, what we see are the family of Cush and the family of Ham that's being spoken of. And so they are the kind of the ones that are in charge at this time. And so what would it be that some of Shem's family had already went out and were scattering about? I don't know. But it was interesting to me that in that time frame when the division took place, Abram was alive, at least in part of that time frame. So that was interesting to know that. But Peleg lived 30 years, and he begat Reu, it says, in verse 18. Verse 19, Peleg lived after he begat Reu 209 years and begat sons and daughters. So Eberew lives 464, Peleg lives 239. So what you're finding is some of these fathers, or some of these sons rather, are dying before their fathers in how this genealogy ends, or the rapid nature at which the lifespans are dropping. You actually have some of the sons dying before their fathers in the genealogies here as this goes forward. And so Peleg only lives 239, whereas his father lived 464. Reu, Peleg's son, he would live 32 years in verse 20, and he begat Serug. and Reu lived after he begat Serug 207 years and begat sons and daughters. So Serug only lived 230 years. So we see this again, this rapid drop in the lifespan here. Serug, the Bible tells us, lived 30 years, and he begat Nahor. And Nahor, Serug rather, lived after he begat Nahor 200 years and begat sons and daughters. So Serug only lives 230 years. And he begat sons and daughters. And Nahor lived 29 years and begat Terah. And Nahor lived after he begat Terah 119 years and begat sons and daughters. So Nahor only lived 148 years. So I mean, you can imagine that. I mean, to me, that would be kind of disheartening, I guess. Your grandpa's living 900s, and here you are dying at 148 years. By the way, when Serug died, Noah was still alive when Nahor was born, and it would be in Nahor's life. Noah was still alive when Abraham was born. Noah was still alive. Abraham was 58 years old when Noah would die. Now, that overlap right there, I mean, what would that, I mean, Abraham being alive and his grandpa Noah, the very one that went through the flood, I just go up and visit Papa Noah and let him tell us about the flood again and about the ark and all. I mean, you would have that first-hand knowledge. That's one of the things that is remarkable about the timeline of that genealogy before the flood especially, and then even following the flood briefly, these long ages, that you could go and talk to the people that were there, that experienced these things, and be able to find out about this stuff and how it took place. And they could even take, according to Josephus, who wrote in the first century, Josephus, he records that Noah's Ark was still on the mountains of Ararat. In fact, he names the specific mountain it was. Now, I don't know which one that is, but he names the specific mountain in the mountains of Ararat that Noah's Ark was on. And he said, you could still go to that day in the first century, go and see it. He said, they'll take you on a tour, take you up there to it, and you can look at it. He said, the locals still sell chunks of the ark as amulets. He said, it's still there. You can go and see it. It's on that, they named the mountain, it starts with an M, but it's there in the mountains of Ararat. That was in the first century A.D., Josephus writing. And he tells about four other historians in his day that also wrote about the ark, one of them actually having gone to it and had seen it themselves. And so it was still there in the first century A.D. But here, if it was still there in Josephus' day, it most assuredly was still there in Abraham's day. And to go and visit Papa Noah, who actually built the ark, and then he takes you up on the mountain and show you the ark itself. Yeah, this is what God told me to build, and this is what we built, and this is what we come through the flood on, and this is where we unloaded, and all the animals come off. And, I mean, to actually go and see it and hear it from the mouth of those that were there, that would be absolutely remarkable. And again, these folks in the line down from him are even dying before Noah dies. The Lord allowed him to live that full extent so that by the time Abraham comes along, the father of the nation of Israel, by the time he comes along, Papa Noah's still alive. And he could have, and we don't have no record of it, so we don't know this for a fact, that he went and visited Noah, but he could have. he could have went and actually visited with him and learned of these things and heard about the flood and saw these very things in regards to the flood and the descent of those folks out of the ark and how they ended up in Shinar, how Babel took place. And of course, again, Abraham may have even been alive at the division of the nations when Nimrod built Babel and so on. So these are some of those overlaps that I wanted you to see in this. The Bible tells us here in verse 26, Terah lived 70 years. And again, this is the end of this genealogy. And it does the same thing as it did with Noah. Noah lived 500 years and begat Shem, Ham, Japheth. It gets to the end of this genealogy, and it says Terah. Now these, verse 26, Terah lived 70 years and begat Abraham, Nahor, and Haran. So it ends it like that, you know, just the same way. And I thought that was interesting. You have the same ending of Noah's genealogy. You have the same kind of ending there as you have with Abram's genealogy here. It just ends with, okay, here is the daddy, and he lived this many years and begat these three sons. And there's not a specific given in this genealogy for these three. The Terah lived 70 years, begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Now, verse 27 says, now these are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran begat Lot. And Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees. So we see Haran himself. Now the other two we don't know for sure because it doesn't give us any delineation on who's the oldest, who's the youngest, whatever the case may be. But Haran was born in Ur of the Chaldees, and that's where Haran would die. So Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees. Now Ur is anywhere from 100 to 150 miles southeast of Shinar, where Babel took place. And so it's on the southern end. This is down next to the Persian Gulf region there at the base of the Euphrates River and the Tigris River is where they go into the Persian Gulf there. That's kind of where the land or the city of Ur is. So it tells us Haran died before Terah in Ur of the Chaldees. And Abram and Nahor took them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. And we find in Genesis chapter 20 and verse number 12 that she was his half-sister. She was Terah's daughter, but not Abram's mother's daughter. So it was his half-sister that Abram would marry. Nahor took Milcah, and she was the daughter of Haran, and that's Milcah's niece that he would marry. The name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Iscah. And so Haran may have had another daughter, Iscah, and she, some have surmised, may actually be the wife of Lot. And the reason they surmise that is because all the men mentioned are mentioned with a wife, and why other reason would they mention Iscah if she didn't somehow fit into the picture here somewhere? And it's already mentioned that Lot was born to Haran, and so it may be that Iscah, that Lot would take her to wife. But we're not told her name. When we get over to chapter 19, whenever she would look back at Sodom and Gomorrah and see the cities burning and turn to a pillar of salt there, we're not told her name. She's just known as Lot's wife there at that point. But some have surmised that this may be her here, is the reason that this one is mentioned, because there's no other place that Yitzchak is mentioned anywhere. And so it's believed, because the rest of them all are in the picture here, that her name is mentioned because she would be the wife of Lot later on. And so it tells us here that Abram and Nahor took them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. The name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Yitzchak. But Sarai was barren. She had no child. And so Sarah was barren, could not have children, and of course, we know that she didn't have children for her, especially during childbearing years, and was old when God came to her and said, I'm going to give you a child, and even then she laughed and did not believe. That's crazy. I'm an old woman. I'm even past childbearing ability. And they would name their son Laughter because she laughed. And of course Isaac would be born to them when Sarah was 90 years old and Abram 100. The Lord would give them Isaac there. But because of her barrenness, Sarah tried to help God out. And, of course, we'll get into that when we get over into those particular chapters and looking at this. You have God giving promises to Abram. And God gives us many promises in the Scripture, but be assured of this. In regards to God's promises, you will not and cannot fulfill them for God. God will fulfill His promises. You wait on Him to fulfill His promises. We cannot fulfill them for Him. Because when we try to fulfill them for Him, we will make a massive mess. And this is exactly what Sarah and Abraham would do when they tried to fulfill God's promise. We are still feeling the effects of it even today, trying to fulfill God's promise. And so, God will keep His promises and He will perform them as in His time and when He is ready, and will do so how He wants to do it. It says here, verse 31, Terah took Abram his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan, and they came unto Haran and dwelt there. And the days of Terah were 205 years. And Terah died in Haran. And so Terah would live 205 years. And he died in Haran. Now, he is already moving his family toward. That's what the Bible tells us, is he is moving toward the land of Canaan. But God would call on Abram here in chapter 12 that we'll get to next time, Lord willing. He would call on Abram to come to the land of Canaan, that he would be the focus. It wouldn't be Terah that would be the focus, but it would be Abram. And it would be his purpose, it would be his task to come to the land of Canaan, for there the Lord would give him this land and would give him these promises that would belong unto Abraham and to his people after him, that are these covenants and promises that are still in force today. And again, literally everything from this point forward is going to come back to this. Not only Genesis chapter 3 verse 15 is a giant promise that it's all focused on, and it is that promise coming through Abraham now that we'll get into that shows how it applies specifically to God's people and how he brings that promise to pass through his people that he set aside for himself to bring these promises upon. The flood came 1,656 years after creation. Noah died 2,006 years after creation. The confusion of Babel again took place in Peleg's day, and he lived from 1,757 years to 1,996 years after creation. So Noah was still alive when the division took place with Babel. He was still alive then. Shem, of course, was alive at that time, for we have in historical records, Shem was the one that would go down and kill Nimrod, as we talked about Wednesday, and chop him up in little pieces, and where Semiramis would call herself a virgin and have the Son of God to moo, and that's what she would claim, and all that stuff that was born out of that religious cult there with Nimrod. Abram was born at 1,948 years after creation. Again, meaning Abram was 58 years old when Noah died. 58 years old. And so he could still go and see Papa Noah and hear all about the flood and about the ark and about God's grace poured out upon his children there during the time of the flood. So there, in this genealogy, we have many overlaps. And of course, you have Terah stopping here in Haran, here at the end of chapter 11, and when we take up with chapter 12, we have, of course, Abram and his call of God and the promise given to him. And of course, the Lord will reiterate this promise. He gives him a portion of it there in chapter 12, chapter 15, chapter 17. He continues to give him these promises and reiterate this and extend the promise and give more detail concerning it. And we see as this, how this unfolds, as God draws Abram to himself and shows him that he is the God of heaven, that he is the one that has chosen Abram and his children after him. So the remarkable story of Abram, or who would become Abraham, as we take up our study next time. All right, let's all stand and we'll be dismissed today. Wow.